Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve.
And that is Barry McGuire in 1965's Eve of Destruction, which actually is a really good lead-in song for tonight's guest.
It definitely is.
Who is sitting over here looking at me expectantly like she's going to be able to talk in a second and, thank you.
Nope.
She's not going to be able to.
You know, one of these days I got to go into your office and see how many rooms your music library actually takes up.
You know what it is? I go to Amazon and I buy them. I do.
That'll work.
I find out who the guest is going to be, and usually about a week before, two or three days before the show, I'll go in and I get the genre of the book and do the feel of the book, and then I pick some music for it. So this happened to be perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can't hear you yet. Okay, wait a minute. Say perfect.
Perfect.
Okay, that's it. That's all you get. Okay. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Jim. And how are we tonight?
We are good. We were over at Black Angus a little earlier.
We
did. We had a nice dinner with our guest tonight, and her husband as well. And he is, of course, sitting over here being wondrously wonderfied by live radio.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's probably like us Tuesday morning wondering what in the world he's gotten himself into.
I'm sure he does, and we figured it out finally.
Yeah, that was a strange visit.
It was an interesting morning,
yeah.
Was it not? Yes.
Yes.
We finally found out how much Danny really was worth.
Yeah, we did.
And what it takes.
It was definitely TMI. It was definitely too much information for me.
It was. Okay, Richard.
All righty, sir. If you are a first-time author and you have just typed those glorious words, the end, on your very first manuscript, you probably are sitting there thinking your work is all done. No, it's not. It's just getting started. And here comes the music again. You still need to have your manuscript.
You
know what?
It's going to be that way all night.
I can tell. You still need to have your manuscript edited, formatted, and create a book cover for it. And then the really hard part starts. You got to market that thing, because if you don't, nobody else out there is going to for you. Unless you give the people at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books a call.
Hoorah.
Because they have they have a program for first-time writers to help them get their manuscript ready and released so that you can get paid real actual money.
And he was drinking Coke.
I know. I think they slipped something into it, though. Because I can't see my script here.
Okay.
Anyway, for more information on the program, give Tuscany Bay Books a call at 805-795-3165, or you can email them at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, or check out the website at blackdogpublishing.co.
.co would be correct.
And they will get you on your way to publishing success. And Jim.
Yes.
The Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival is 3 weeks away, and I ain't got nothing to wear.
What do you mean?
I'm going to show up in t-shirts.
Well, I'm going to tell you, right, so Richard, I'm going to tell you right now.
All right, tell me where I can go.
Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian lifestyle. Shop for unique, and I say again, unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. You can shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com. You enter code WB100 and receive $10 off your order, or you can call them live, and a real live person will answer the phone at 877-340-9378. And the proprietor of said Out West shop is on the phone with us right now. Bobby Jean, are you there?
I am. Good evening, gentlemen and Peggy.
Okay. Well, yeah, just hang tough just a minute, Bobby, because we have, of course. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management LTL today. 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski for truckload or any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for LTO or less than truckload. Tell them you heard it on the writer's block and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can always go to www.targetfmi.com on the web.
There you go.
There it is.
You know, I figured out what's wrong is that they didn't have Dr. Pepper where we dined, and I had to settle for Pepsi. That's got me all screwed up.
Who the hell wants to drink Pepsi?
I know, but I had to.
That's like a major ew.
Yeah, it was either that or Sierra Mist, which is, you know, I might as well just drink water.
Yuck. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Send your letters of complaint to
I will. I
no,
walk into an
send them to Black Angus.
I walk into an establishment. I expect Dr. Pepper on the table.
He does, too.
I guess I'm not going to try to get them as a sponsor for the show.
I'll tell you what he does, though. When they say, no, we don't have Dr. Pepper, we have Mr. Pibb.
Oh,
and he just goes, oh, no.
No.
He's like this total Dr. Pepper snob.
Very. Yeah.
It's like a boy from Texas and his RC Cola and Moon Pie. Richard is like this Dr. Pepper freak.
You say that as if it's a bad thing.
It is RC not a bad thing. Okay, come on. Let's what's your names here?
We got Peggy, are you still with us?
No, I'm leaving.
She's walking out the door as we speak.
Okay, now we actually have a short bio.
Yes, let's get to it.
Okay. Nonfiction articles, short stories, and poetry appear in numerous Colorado and California publications, small press magazines, and anthologies. Dragon Moon Press in Canada recently published her debut novel, The Raven's Daughter, which we read and was a terrific book, incidentally. Shortlisted for the CCC, is that something like Federal Roosevelt CCC program?
Yeah, it is.
Great novel contest. Dragon Moon Press is also publishing her next three titles. The Splendid and Extraordinary Life of Beautimus Potamus is due very soon. It is out now. Chaco is out now.
It is out.
And you are still working on the second book on The Raven's Daughter.
Yes, I am.
Okay. She earned a B.A. in History and English Literature, UCLA, M.A. in Creative Writing, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because half of it's a lie. We know that. Okay. She won her first prize awards for two of her poems from an Evergreen Press Nationwide Poetry Contest and honorable mentions from the judges of a Los Angeles Poetry Festival and the Academy of American Poets. Her poem, Dufu?
That's right.
Dufu?
That is right.
Is that French for...
No, that's a...
Dufu?
Yeah, it's a Chinese guy.
Oh, really a Chinese guy? Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we can't hear you yet. Was nominated for a Reisling Award for Best Science Fiction Poem. It's a science fiction poem.
Yes.
Cool. She's led critique groups in both Colorado and California. Would you please welcome to the writer's block once again, her second appearance, Mrs. Peggy Wheeler. Okay, you're here.
I'm here.
You know, if the fire marshal ever comes in here and sees how many people we get jammed in this little space, we're in trouble.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're only in trouble if they see the bottles of booze on the table.
That's true. Bobby Jean, remember we were talking about steering the program? I've lost control.
Yes, I know. I can totally tell.
I don't have the wheel. Peggy, we're done.
Welcome to the writer's block. We're so happy to have
you. Well, you know what? We all figured that tonight was going to be a fun night, and it's going to be a fun night.
Well, it always is, yes.
I actually wanted to ask Peggy, because the last time I had actually spoken with her, she was working on the sequel to A Raven's Daughter.
Right.
And, of course, we have gotten two books in between, and still no sequel to Raven's Daughter.
I know.
I'm working on it.
That's my next project.
Aha. Well, the two co-hosts that I have, Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, Richard Polinelli, both read Butimus Potamus.
All right.
Okay, so spend 2 seconds out of your busy normal life. Tell us what the book is about.
Well, it's a bit of a parody. It is an allegorical fantasy. It is meant to be a bit funny and on the light side. I kind of describe it as a cross between Avatar and Fantasia. I don't know. It's just a very bizarre.
But Mickey Mouse
all
is
talking
not
animals.
In it.
Well, no, but the dancing hippo from Fantasia is in there.
With the tutus.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And she did take classes from Auntie Nancy's School of Fancy Dancing, which is a ballet school. So yeah, she was a dancer.
I opted for Chaco.
Hey, we went with the New Age flamingo. So
yes. Oh, they were too funny.
All right, let's try to get laughing. Serious here for
I
a
was,
moment.
I was laughing or smiling or grinning from ear to ear as I read this book. And it was fairly lengthy. You had a lot to share with us.
Oh,
she did.
And I cut it. I mean, it had been quite a bit longer.
Really?
But I cut it, yeah.
How do you write a really long allegorical book?
Well, I don't know.
I can't see that happening.
Yeah,
I mean, allegories are supposed to be kind of short and fun and ba-da-boom, 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 you're done.
Well, it's also a fantasy, and fantasies tend to be rather long.
Yeah. You know, they can be.
Yeah, they can be. So it's it was kind of a cross. I don't know. It's a bizarre. It's a mishmash book. Yeah. You know, it's a mashup.
Oh, well, I know that there are a bunch of Peggy's friends out here just dying to call into the show tonight. And if you do want to do that, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And if you're out there with your finger on the dialer, feel free. Okay. So you wrote Butimus Potamus, which is about a dancing hippo.
Well, not about a dancing hippo.
No, I know. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
And Butimus, or the Potamus, or whatever his name is on another planet.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I didn't read the book, so.
Yeah, that's okay.
I got into the dark side. I went to Chaco.
You went Chaco.
I went Chaco.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chaco was an interesting story.
Well, I think that what helps make Potamus a long book is the characters are long-lived. They're not, they don't go like 10 years or anything like that. You got, somebody's got 400 years of stories to tell.
Right.
You've got a lot of material to work with, and I really like that you told full life stories for all of the characters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you really got to know them. Like, with a shorter book, it's like, okay, we're focusing on this and we'll deal with anything else later. Right. So that helped it a lot.
Thank you.
It made the characters really...
Bobby Jean, just jump in whenever.
Yeah, go for
it. I'll try.
Okay. I actually have to know, where did this idea come from?
Well, mm-hmm. it was a combination of things. But basically, my mother was in her 90s and in a am I not loud enough?
You're good.
There we go. Okay.
No, you're good.
Okay. Was in a nursing home. She was incontinent, blind, had dementia, could not feed herself. So I was writing a book to entertain her. And I had had I was talking to my husband back in 2011 in summer. I said, you know, I was kind of thinking, what would a book be about one of those dancing hippos from Fantasia as a grown-up person, what her life would have been like? And I had not too long before seen Cameron's,
James Cameron's Avatar?
Avatar. Yeah. And I thought, how fun would it be to kind of do a mashup between those and do a little sci-fi, a little... Anyway, I wrote bits of this book over a period of time, and I would bring it into my mother and read it to her, and I did not know how much of it she understood, but she tended to laugh at the right places and get a little upset if I said a nasty word. She's saying, nasty. So she kind of got it. And at the end of the book, I thought she was asleep. She was lying back in her bed. Her mouth was open. Her eyes were closed. I read the last of it. I started to close it up and take it tiptoe out of the room. And she bolted out of bed, and she said, that was beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
So I dedicated that book to her, and just it was the last thing I ever read to her very shortly after she was gone. So I wrote it for my mom.
Hmm.
Good
well,
for you.
You fill it with so much detail, you know, and I did read some reviews of the book. And, of course, reviews never really get into sort of the nitty-gritty. They give us an overall kind of impression the reader maybe has had. But, Richard, weren't you amazed at, you know, the food that's described, the landscape, the two suns, the two moons, the whole, each character you fully develop, which Richard had said a moment ago as well, but it's like, I want to go there and I want to eat the strawberry soup. And, you know, I really want to, I want to go to that festival, the Wasnia Festival, you know.
That's what you get for not reading the book. Jim.
Well, I read the other one. I know things about the other one you don't know.
It's just chock full. Now, I did start keeping a little list of the terms used for animal groupings, because you litter the book. It's like there isn't a page that doesn't go by that you will, you know, make a comment about the colony of the chinchilla or the murder of crows. Some of those terms I was familiar with, but a lot of them I wasn't. And I actually went online because I thought, is she making some of these up? And no, they're, you know.
They're the real deal. Yeah, I did a lot of research on that book for that.
You did a lot of research on this book. And it shows, because I think that's what kind of makes the fantasy sort of, you know, believable.
Well,
it's surprisingly that you mentioned reviews, because I happen to have a couple reviews here for Butimus Potamus. The first one is a 5-star review that she got on Butimus. After reading the title, I didn't think I would enjoy this book, but I couldn't have been more wrong. What a lovely and vivid read. Miss Wheeler certainly knows how to craft an unusual story into very familiar feelings. I'm taking a 2-week break, and then I'm going to read it again just to make sure I didn't miss a smile tucked away somewhere. Kudos to the writer. I didn't think she could top the quality I found in The Raven's Daughter, but again, I was wrong. And another one, another 5-star review, was well-written and enchanting. Not the type of book I usually read, but so glad I did. I would recommend this to anyone.
Nice.
So congratulations.
Thank
That's some
you.
Nice reviews.
Yeah.
Well, now, you had said earlier that you thought you had a small audience that you were targeting, but
right.
It turns out you've got a much
Huge.
Wider audience
yeah.
than you thought.
I had no idea. No, I really didn't. I had no idea. And I thought that it would be really targeted, like I said, to women over 50 who go to the conventions and, you know, the fantasy conventions and have a little dragon on their shoulder, mm-hmm. you know, that kind.
Yeah.
Or the new agey types. But it's really, it has a wider audience than I had ever imagined. And the first of those 5 stars you read was by a pretty rough and tumble guy.
You could tell. I mean, yeah. He was damn sure he wasn't going to like the book.
Yeah, he was damn sure he wasn't going to like it. And it's, you know, it's, I thought it was going to be kind of a girly book and a really niche market, but it really isn't.
Right.
Well, you know, her first book, The Raven's Daughter. Oh, go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I was just going to say that when you have a cast of characters that includes a Tyrannosaurus Rex, a praying mantis, you know, besides our the hippopotamus.
That goes in my backyard.
You have every kind of size and shape, and they all get along. Certainly we have, you know, we have some tension, and there's a few folks that kind of go to the dark side. But basically, you know, all of these species are getting along just fine. Right. And they're aware of each other. She tries not to stomp on the, you know, she's getting out of the water and there's some little fish and, you know, she's, and everybody's very aware of each other.
Right.
And it's, I was able to suspend, you know, I was able to go in with my imagination pretty darn quickly.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. That's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Even though the
and there are lessons. There are lessons there that are also
little,
sharing.
Yeah,
there
allegory.
Are.
Yeah, there's a little allegory. Yeah.
Read the book. You got to read it.
Read
and learn. No, even though the characters are animals that we recognize roaming around our planet, there's still a human trait. There's a humanity right. to them. And I think that's what helps make the connection. If you just had animals without that, I don't know that the book would have been as successful. But you've got that touch of humanity in there, and I think that's what makes it work for mm-hmm. such a wide audience.
Well, my goal was for people to forget these were animals within the first two or three chapters, and a lot of people told me that's so. They didn't see them as animals anymore. And I was trying to do a little allegory in terms of how things are on Earth versus and this planet Rendaz. So I think I pulled that off okay.
You did, yeah.
Thank you.
So you definitely recognize human traits in these animals.
Oh, yes.
So you forget that they're animals, and all of a sudden you're dealing with them as your next-door neighbor.
Right.
Right.
Except for they don't have opposable thumbs, some of them, or have to use their muzzles to drink their
yes, but we don't have to know
their
that.
Mead, right. Their mead, you know.
No, I think there's more consideration for each other than maybe we all have for one another.
Right.
You know, they're very aware of each other's size and that, you know, these are birds that will fly and they'll be gossip. So be careful what you say when the finches or the magpies or whatever are up above you. But people are aware of size. They're aware of, there's a little more kindness, perhaps, because it's many species rather than just when we're human, we're just human with each other. You know, these folks are having to be really aware of each other.
Right.
Well, I think that's almost a correlation in the animal world here. The animal world is a lot more cordial towards each other.
I think so.
Than we humans are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they tolerate a lot more than we humans do. And speaking of birds, Bianca Murray's parrot in her
oh,
book.
Yes.
The gray parrot that ratted her out every chance he got. What was his name? Elvis.
Elvis.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Elvis, yes.
Yeah. So we like animals in books.
Yeah. Apparently it's a favorite of ours.
Apparently it is.
Well, I was told with the first, the critique group, when I started writing this book in 2011, that nobody would read this book. I just basically said, you know, who reads talking animal books? Is the response
12-year-olds? That
I got. Yes. But it took me from 2011, I don't know how many rejections I got, because no publisher or agent knew what to do with this book. They said, I don't know if there's a market for this.
Yeah.
It took a long time for me to find a publisher for this book.
Yeah, but it's got a great cover.
Doesn't it have a beautiful cover?
It has a great cover.
Is that one of Melissa's?
No. This cover was done by my publisher, Gwen Gades, at Dragon Moon Press, and she does beautiful covers.
Oh, it's just an amazing cover.
Yeah. It really is an amazing cover.
She sort of caught the whole planet, you know, the feel for the planet.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't read the book, but I did see the cover.
And the cover is beautiful.
It is.
It's colorful.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
It is. It's gorgeous.
Well, and then, Peggy, I also read some reviews, very good reviews of the audio version of the book.
Oh, Kelly Hazen, who's the narrator for this, was just amazing. She got every single one of those voices, just I don't know how many there were in there, but she's a trained, seasoned actor, so she's got the chops for this. She was really good. It was a lot of fun.
That would be a challenge, because you do. Yeah. You have a lot of, have a big cast of characters.
Yes, I do. Now, she nailed them. She got them. She did great. Thank you.
That's great.
Well, let's move from Butimus Potamus over to the dark side.
The dark side. Uh-huh.
Let's talk about Chaco for a minute.
Sure.
Chaco was a book that was initially not well received from you.
Right.
And it took some reading and people reading it to really start getting the gist of the book.
Right.
And I have to agree. I mean, it's hard to get into that book because it's something that we don't want to look at.
That's right, yeah.
And I mean, for something to happen and the entire grid of the world goes out.
Right.
And no one has anything.
That's right.
And to try to survive beyond that point it's tough.
That's right.
And the story is hard. It truly is hard.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
It is brutal. And it follows a group of pilgrims, I guess, for lack of a better word, from the hills of California into the mountains of Northern California.
Right.
And trying to get to what's the name of the valley they want to get to?
They want to get to a mountain called Pine Mountain.
There's a self-sustaining commune there. Yeah,
right,
and it's
so they can survive.
The trials of these people, going from vehicle to sleds to foot, is amazing.
Thank you.
It's truly amazing. And I appreciated the story. I really did. And neither one of my cohorts read it. It's a hard book to read.
It is hard.
Richard said at dinner, that we've had a rush of dark books that we've had to read the last probably five weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, you get a chance to read something that's a little lighter. Boy, you got to jump on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This did grab me from the very beginning. I thought it was so. I really liked the character of Chaco, and
yeah.
I just kind of ran out of time trying to get too red. But I thought the premise was really interesting,
yes,
because this is not an unusual circumstance. The idea that we could, lose power and whatever, and really have to kind of start over again, but you introduce a character that wouldn't normally be the kind of hero.
Exactly. I was looking for that.
And yet he has all of those hero attributes.
Right.
And demonstrated them in life in El Salvador.
Right.
And he's just been, here in the States, not really getting any of the recognition that he deserves, except from some scientists that do know.
Right.
What he's made of. And I think that's also an important thing to think about, the people around us. We need to be less, we need to be more observant and more aware that the person bagging your groceries may have a whole lot more
going on. PhD from El Salvador.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can tell you a story about that very quickly. Back in the early, mid-70s, I worked at Pepperdine University, and there was a gentleman who came in every night, a Hispanic man who cleaned up, and I speak a little bit of Spanish, not a lot, but we started to talk, and I found out that he had been a university professor in El Salvador, and he had come here as a refugee, a political refugee, and he was working, he was here undocumented, but was working cleaning the rooms at Pepperdine University so he could at least be around other academics. Mm-hmm. And he had taught Japanese, had spent lots of time in Japan and spoke Japanese and Spanish and German fluently, but didn't speak English very well. But he was this brilliant man. You would have never known had you just seen him. You just would have thought, he's a worker bee.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant guy. And he's part of the pattern or part of the part of why I wrote Chaco was because of him.
Well, the character certainly is memorable,
yeah.
I do have to say, and to follow him reluctantly lead these people, because he does do it reluctantly. He does not want to be a leader.
No, he doesn't.
He does not want to use his skills that he learned as a guerrilla fighter.
Right.
He just wants to be Chaco. He just wants to be a guy.
Yeah, he does. He wants to get to his lady love. Right.
He's constantly being assaulted and attacked and by the antagonist of the book, whose name happens to be Rocky.
Rocky Pennyman, yeah.
Rocky is not a very nice person.
No, not from the get-go.
But his wife, Margot, is awesome.
I liked her from the very beginning. I couldn't figure out what the heck she's doing with that guy.
I know, huh? That's what I was thinking. What the hell is Margot doing with Rocky?
Come on, already.
When you have a chance, I don't know that you will, Bobby, because you're so busy, but read the rest of the book and find out a little bit more about Rocky.
Yeah,
I wanted to just beat the crap out of Rocky about halfway through. Every time he turned around, he's saying something nasty, and he's just being a dick.
Yep, he is.
And all of a sudden, he's not.
Yeah, the whole idea for me for this book wasn't really the coronal mass ejection and what happened, but I wanted to show what might happen to a group of people thrown together in that circumstance. So it's more of a character study, and no one, not Chaco, not Margot, not Rocky, none of these people are who you think they are initially.
Right.
And that's the whole point, is to show their growth and their progression. So it's sort of a almost a hero's journey.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing that you managed to show the strength of the characters as the story went, mm-hmm. about what they were able to tolerate, what they were able to do, mm-hmm. as a group and individually.
Right.
As their trails and travails, mm-hmm. you know, progressed. And when it came down to they had to do something, they did it. And there was, right. I mean, that was always somebody pointing a finger.
Uh-huh.
But then you understand why he's always pointing a finger, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, okay, I got that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's good job.
You.
Good
thank
job.
Thank you.
Well, I got into some of it. Mm-hmm. I made it, I don't know how many pages in, and then
six.
I jumped. No, it was further than that. But, I mean, you take a look at the two books. You've got Potamus mm-hmm. here, you've got Chaco there, and they are
completely different.
Yeah. How did you manage that as a writer? Because, you know, not a whole lot of writers could take those two extremes and make them
right.
Work.
Well, as I have a very good friend named Randall Platt, and you look her up. She's actually had a movie made out of one of her books. She's a seasoned writer, and she basically told me that I needed to find a planet and land on it. I do not know what genre I want to write in yet. And mm-hmm. my publisher is a little concerned that I have to, for each book, because they're so different, all three of them mm-hmm. are so different, that I have to find almost a completely different readership for each one. So mm-hmm. it'll be a little bit harder for them to take off. But I'll mm-hmm. tell you, I'm having a ball trying, experimenting with all these different genres.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I want to be a one-genre wonder. You know, I don't know.
Maybe your platform is, I'm just going to tell a very good story.
Uh-huh.
And whatever it happens, whatever
category happens,
falls
it happens.
In is,
yeah.
that's the slot it's in. But everything that you know, you write or I write, mm-hmm. that's our goal, is to tell a story that entertains the reader.
Exactly.
Because you've got the Raven's Daughter, that was mysticism,
mm-hmm.
a lot of mysticism.
Yeah.
Then you've got...
And it was dark.
Beautimus Potamus, that's
pure fantasy.
That's whimsy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then you shoot into Chaco, which is...
Dystopian.
It's grit. Yeah. It's total grit, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a few minutes here. I'm going to put you all on hold, and we're going to do a commercial, and then we'll be back to you in just a second. So hang tough.
Okay.
Bobby Jean, stay there. Do not hang up.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay. Alrighty then. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is, for your dog. That's right, All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one or two night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better?
The house hound,
yeah, the porch hound, the dog. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. And, of course, Richard will thank you.
Yes.
He likes the extra money.
And you know what? If you need a dog to send to All Dogs Rule, give me a call. I'll loan you mine.
There you go.
And
I like it.
I won't take him back.
Hallelujah, brother. Okay, well, we lost Peggy for a minute.
We lost Peggy for a
moment. We did. Well, it's now 7:32 on a Thursday evening. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block.
So should we put Steve on the
spot? So now we have Peggy's husband, Steve. Actually, we call him Bob.
Bob.
and it's, here, Bob. Steve. Let me here. Now you can tell lies on your wife quick before she comes back.
I'm looking out the window. She can't come in.
No.
Actually, Steve Wheeler's here with us, and he's just being Steve.
He's being Steve. Yeah. So a question. You're the spouse of the writer in the house.
Correct.
And my wife is busting my chops all the time on stuff I've done and written. So do you get to read some of the stuff before it goes out, or do you just stay out of it?
Oh, she makes me read everything. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. And I get to slash and burn and do corrections and go, what the heck was this?
She just came back in.
Yeah. Everybody.
Cheese it. The chick's back.
So, So she bounces stuff off of you, and then
yes. We sit, and it's usually in the morning. We'll grab a pot of coffee and just start talking and schmoozing about what is going on in her brain, and which is really terrifying sometimes.
I absolutely have no doubt. I've read some of her posts.
But she is a great storyteller. I really like what she does. So we have fun.
She is a good storyteller.
Well, that is, he's definitely only is a good saying that because I sleep with him.
Well, and because you're sitting right next to him, and have your fist clenched.
So, Peggy, do you write kind of all day long, or how do you organize your time?
I don't. I mean, I am the most undisciplined human being on the planet. So I can sit down, and Steve can verify this, and write for 12, 13 hours at a time, or 5 hours when I think it's a half an hour, then I may not write anything for weeks.
Oh.
I don't have a schedule. I probably would do better if I did, but that's so not me.
It's amazing because that's me too.
Is it?
Yeah, I can sit and I can write a chapter or two in a book. Mm-hmm. But then I've realized that, oh, crap, I got a radio show I got to get ready for. So now I got to dig into another book.
Right.
And everything sits by the wayside for
a little while.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself taking a break after you've done a manuscript? And say, even after it's been edited and everything, you take like a week or two just to unwind for a minute?
You know, sometimes not. I mean, sometimes I'll dive right back into project number two. But very often I do. I can spend really weeks and not write anything. I'll do marketing, networking, the whole, you know, everything else I need to do that's around writing, but I don't actually write new words on paper sometimes for weeks, and I don't, you know, and other times I dive right back in.
Well, see, I don't feel so guilty then.
No, don't feel guilty.
There are times, except when Richard and I were writing, we just finished, as you know, we just finished the book, The Last Lonely Trail.
Yeah.
And I would think I'd have maybe 2 or 3 days before I had to do anything.
No.
Hell no. I open up my email. There's the book. He says, okay, it's on you.
When I'm writing a book, I'm getting from A to B as quickly as I possibly can, getting it edited. But after the project's done, that's when I take like a week or two and just
you need to decompress.
But when the project's on,
it's, I always said I was going to do that, but I never do.
I know. Jim would be like, you couldn't have possibly gotten 2 chapters done.
Uh-huh, yeah. I know. And it's like, he goes, no, 3. I got 3. How? I just saw you yesterday.
Well, when you were writing Beautimus, you said you had started that in 2010 or 2011.
2011,
And it didn't get published until July 4th of 2017. And
that's
in the meantime, Raven's Daughter came out.
Yes.
And then Chaco came out just a couple of months later. So were you writing, were you already in the process of
tandem?
Writing those while you were still writing Beautimus?
No. Actually, the way that I did this was I wrote Beautimus, and I spent a long time rewriting it and workshopping it. And you know how that process goes, where you write something, then you rewrite. So I was doing that. But I had written the initial story, the entire book, actually, in 2011. What I was doing was really working hard to find either an agent or a good publisher for it, and I just got one heartbreak after another. Over 100 rejections for that book before I finally found Dragon Moon Press. And she took it reluctantly, not because she didn't think it was a good book, but like all the other publishers, I don't know who will sell this to. This is a really strange book.
Well, it's a tough book to find a niche for, but once you find it, as you said, it took off.
It's gaining. Well, you know, it's not soaring to, you know, it's just gaining a little bit of traction every time I look to see where my stats are in terms of sales. It's just going up just incrementally. You know, 100, 200. So somebody is buying this book.
Sure.
I don't know who, but somebody is.
Probably 6th graders that want something to read.
Although it has adult themes in it. I mean, certainly you could be a young person and read it and get it and enjoy it, but it isn't really, I didn't feel it was aimed at a young adult.
Well, you know, I mean, you can always redact half of the book.
Yeah. It is. I kind of bill it as a fairy tale for an adult audience.
There you go.
It's read kind of reads like that.
Well, it's like the Harry Potter stuff.
That was
originally targeted for kids, but.
We were talking about The Princess Bride earlier tonight. Yeah. I mean, what a great movie, but it's not for kids.
No, it's not.
You know, and if you really watch it, it's not for kids.
No. And I've got, you know, F-bombs in here and hippos having sex.
And you have to have lived a little bit, and like those flamingos we were talking about before. And then you have Ziggy Robbins. No. It's sort of like, you know, I personally have been to a lot of self
improvement
or you know, I won't say the names of some of those people that I've been to, but you know, I'm not sure that a younger person would get that. They
not
might, you know, think that was funny, or but to me, it was like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what those glossy brochures. I get it. I totally get what this is about right here.
Yeah,
you know,
the bamboozle tour.
And there's a lot of that. I mean, you sprinkle these vignettes throughout where you kind of go, oh my, you know, the string theory, the blue corn.
I got a great idea.
Agriculture, and you know, so
let's hire Stormy Daniels to make it a porn.
Yeah, good. Hippo porn.
She can be hippo porn.
I mean, some of these characters, they're witty and they're very intelligent, man. And they're in their own planet with their own way. They're doing things that we're familiar with.
Yeah.
I mean, they're dealing with issues that we're all familiar with. We just call them different things here, you know.
Right. And we haven't even brought up the trout with ADHD.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but if these animals were on a different planet or they were here, I mean, their planet, they don't know what a human is.
Oh, they do.
Oh, they do.
Discovered us.
Yes, she's. Oh. Yes, we didn't even get there. Yes.
Wait a minute.
Yes, she.
Read the book, Jim.
I got another call.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
You want to see Jim go nuts?
I love these. You know why? You know why? Because they're all of them are crap.
When he was writing his chapters on the book that we were doing together, I was spending my time writing some short stories for anthologies and When the Gods Fell.
Oh my God.
So I was doing three things while you were piddling around with your two chapters.
Oh.
Oh, and another book.
Guys, I've been great friends.
and dealing with Bruce.
Okay, I got to grant you that one. I'll give you that one.
However, we have illustrations finally coming.
Oh, yay.
We have a book we're doing with Bruce Solheim.
That is a
personal journey through paranormal, and it's called Timeless.
Oh, I really want to read that.
And we're waiting and waiting and waiting for illustrations. And unfortunately, his artist has been sick and then got re-sick.
It's been hell
for Bruce to get this stuff done. Yeah, but he's finally getting him ready to get him over to us.
Without the illustrations, we'll have a nice book with big white blanks.
Big white blanks in there where illustrations
You can imagine what it's supposed to
be
like.
Or just draw your own photo. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
Interactive, you know?
Or just put your photo
So, gentlemen,
here.
I'm looking at the clock. Which one of you is asking the question tonight?
You are.
No. I think I've asked the question most recently.
Okay, I'll let Richard do it because Peggy actually has answered that question before, but we can let her answer it.
Well, we have new listeners and so forth, so
sure.
I will take the hit for the team here.
Oh, Peggy, awesome. Yes.
Do you ever get writer's block? And if you do,
yes.
What do you do to beat off that foul beast?
Oh, well, wait a minute. Change your vernacular on that one, please.
Somebody asked.
We don't beat off foul beasts.
Oh,
ally the foul beast.
you are not going back on the Tuesday morning show with Sam anymore.
No, I know. I know. It's bad.
I don't want to hear about beating off foul beasts. I really don't.
That would be an improvement over what we put up with on Tuesday morning.
That is true.
So okay. What do you do to beat? What do you do to defeat writer's block?
Well, interestingly enough, I asked this just this very morning on Facebook.
Oh, there you go.
Somebody said, "What do you do if you get writer's block?" And I said, "It's two things: time and persistence." And then you can underlie that with just keep writing.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Or I go on the radio show and make an absolute fool out of myself.
Well, which is fun, right?
Yeah.
It's fun.
I'm making a note. Next time, just get a drink. Forget the Pepsi.
That's right.
I don't know why you didn't to start with.
I wish I had now.
So. There you go. Well, that's because they didn't have Mr. Pibb. Oh, no. No.
Hey.
No, Dr. Pepper. Dr.
Okay,
Pepper.
Okay, I'm going to ask Peggy another question. Sure. I'm going to try to rein us in one more time here.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Bobby.
Peggy, you had shared that it took you about 100 rejections before you found the publisher.
Yes.
What do you have any kind of words of wisdom for those folks that are going through a similar kind of trial or don't even want to start that because they're fearful of it? Can you share a little bit about your process on that?
Yeah, and my husband's sitting right next to me, so he can confirm this. I would sometimes cry. Because I'd get very frustrated, and I'd put my face in a pillow and cry myself to sleep, and then I'd get up the next morning and write again, or publish, or query or sub again. Mm-hmm. You just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Yeah. We hear
and
that.
We've heard that before, too, right,
yeah.
Jim and Richard?
Yeah,
100,
we have.
It almost seems like 100 almost is like the, you know.
That's the basic amount of rejections that you're going to get before you actually find someone who's willing to even look at your manuscript.
That's right. You know, and I had some real close calls. There was a pretty high-ranking agent in New York who looked at Butimus Potamus, called me. We talked. She rejected it. We talked again just a couple years ago, and she rejected it back in 2011. She goes, I really love this book. I just don't know if I can take a risk on it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But we were so close. I thought I was going to sign with her, and she was a big agent.
Yeah.
And it was I did get an agent for it, and she ended up quitting agenting to do some other work. But I just ended up with Dragon Moon Press, kind of, I'm just sort of a lucky thing. I mean, she had taken my other book, The Raven's Daughter, and really liked it. So she said she would take this book basically because she wanted to get it off my plate so I get back to the sequel to The Raven's Daughter.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were going to be working closely with Melissa Carrigy.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah,
like
and
her.
Melissa's been a guest on the show. We love Melissa. She's a great chick.
Yeah,
so
she's wonderful.
Good luck with that. She's well worth the time.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I really love her, yeah.
Yeah, she's actually just did a children's book not too long ago.
Yes, she did. Yeah. A really nice one, too.
Yeah.
I did a review on it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. She's an ex agent.
And now she's
working her way
things.
Up into
yeah.
the world. And
yeah, she is.
Good luck with her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Anything else, there, Bobby Jean?
No.
Oh, thank you, Bobby.
Wow. Nope.
Thank you, Bobby.
Well, I'm sure I can come up with something, but
Time. We're gonna have some announcements we have to make. So.
Okay.
Peggy, if you would, tell our listeners where they can contact you and how they can get a hold of you.
Well, I'm really happy to give out my email, which is pawheelerwriter@gmail.com. I also have a website, peggyawheeler.com. I'm also on Amazon. You can find my books on all the usual places. So Audible, I have ebooks and printed books, and I'd love to hear from you.
And that's all the online booksellers as well?
All the online booksellers, all the normal regular places, yeah.
And looking to move to Turlock?
Maybe. Either that.
I like
the great metropolis of Turlock.
The huge metropolis.
Maybe.
In my completely unbiased opinion.
Well, of course. Yeah. And then, of course, Bobby Jean has moved to the giant metropolis of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, Albuquerque's lovely. Oh.
Yes, I'm out here in Albuquerque where we had no idea there was so much crime.
Oh, I know.
Well,
isn't that amazing?
Didn't want to tell you that. But
yeah, it is. Yep. Keep your doors locked.
And stay on the other side of the tracks.
Yes.
That's
right.
Yeah. but we're enjoying it very much.
We are enjoying it very much.
Good.
Yeah, Albuquerque's beautiful. Thank you so much, Bobby. It's so nice meeting you.
Oh, I'm so happy that I was scheduled to be on with you tonight.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we wouldn't never not call you Bobby.
Well, no, I mean, the last time she was on with Russ. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
It was
right.
Great that this has just happened that she was on a week that Richard and I participated.
And she got Russ live.
Yes, I did. I got Russ Lyon.
Yeah, and he wussed out on me last week.
Then. Oh.
So what are you working on next? Do you have a project? Oh, yeah. You're working on the Raven Daughter. You're working on the Raven's Daughter.
I am working on that. Another project, which is a sci-fi called The Woman in the Desert. And maybe I'll come back on when those...
Yeah.
Hey, all you got to do is get a hold of the bookie.
Yes, I know. I
she
know
she can
your
make
bookie.
That happen for you. Anytime.
Thank
you're welcome.
You.
Anytime.
Thank you.
And you're welcome to call in whenever you want.
Oh yeah, you know I probably will.
Well, I hope you do.
I might embarrass you a little.
I don't think so.
No,
but
not on this show. No,
you can try.
If he can figure out how to take the phone call.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, there are times when Skype is messing up, like almost like right now, Bobby. Bye. No, there are times when we answer the phone and there's nobody there.
I know. But we would love it if authors called in because we are fully booked, but there's always time to have somebody call in and just tell us something that's going on, something you're working on, something you read, you just have to rave about, an appearance you have coming up. I mean, we would love that.
Take 2 minutes out of your busy day and give us a heads up.
I would do that.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's close enough, you never know. Somebody might show up.
That's right.
If it's near Albuquerque, Bobby Jean might show.
Love it.
Oh, absolutely.
Actually, Bobby Jean is going to be here in this studio on the 19th of April when our guest is John Sanford.
How exciting.
I know.
Very.
It's exciting for us, too. I'm just loving having him in the studio. On the phone. He'll be on the phone, but at least you.
He'll be here.
Yeah. Next week, what do I have here? Next week. Where's my next week? Did I give it to somebody?
No, you did not.
I did not. Oh, crap.
John Leonard Pellmeyer.
Yeah.
I think.
That's close.
That sounds
close enough.
That's close. I have. Yeah, anyway, he wrote a book, Hook.
That'd be fun.
And about Robin Hood, here we go, about Peter Pan growing up. John Leonard Pellmeyer.
Pellmeyer. Okay. And then Karen Lee.
And Karen Lee, the John Sanford, and then Bruce Soheim.
How fun.
Who's
wow.
timeless and a personal history through paranormal. Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, we have the 21st and 22nd of next month. That is the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
Excellent.
Bobby Jean and Jim Bell will be there on Saturday only. Mm-hmm. If you're planning on going to the Cowboy Festival and you want to see Bobby Jean and Jim, they'll be there Saturday.
Okay.
And along with writers, Richard and myself will be there. Courtney Joyner, J.R. Sanders, Eric Eisner, Al Bringus, Bob Brill, Dale Jackson, Johnny D. Boggs, who's a great writer, one of the talking heads off the History Channel, Katie Ryan, Peter Shirako, and Michael Blake.
Yay.
So these are
great
all
lineup.
Good Western writers. They'll all be there. And that's going to be it for us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. It was
thanks
fun.
For coming in. Thanks for going
this
out.
This was fun.
Thanks was for having fun. Dinner with us.
Oh, it was so much good.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Good. Thank you.
We ate and drank, Bobby Jean.
Yes, we
did. I got that.
You got that, yeah. Well, we didn't drink too much, but we drank just enough.
Yes, we did. Just enough.
Just enough. Okay. With that being said, this is another Thursday night. We have shot totally in the butt. And we thank you all for listening. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block for Richard Polinelli, Bobby Jean Bell, myself, and, of course, our in-house guest. What's your name? Peggy Wheeler?
It's still
what's
Peggy
her name?
I know, huh? We are out of here.